Coming up, my thoughts on the latest news involving the Los Angeles Clippers aspiration investigation. Plus, we got a deal over the weekend. Dennis Schroeder was traded for Trey Mann. And I think there's a strong probability that this might be the predecessor to a potentially bigger deal for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then later, Trey Kirby from No Dunks joins me to discuss the next four teams on my NBA entertainment rankings. We've got breaking news, folks. ESPN has an update on the Clippers' Kawhi Leonard aspiration situation. They wrote, "The NBA has found no evidence showing LA Clippers owner Steve Ballmer funneled money through team sponsors to pay Kawhi Leonard in order to circumvent the salary cap." They continued, "The league has presented no evidence that Ballmer funneled money to Leonard. Instead, the NBA is focused on whether the team's introduction of Leonard to team sponsors constitutes a violation of the league's rules prohibiting salary cap circumvention." And they also continued later on, "In recent days, both sides have been negotiating a resolution to the investigation, according to their sources. But within an hour of this coming out on ESPN, the NBA released a statement pushing back against it strongly. The NBA said, ESPN's article regarding the LA Clippers investigation, for which the NBA declined to cooperate, contains numerous and significant inaccuracies. The results of this matter will be made clear once the investigation is concluded." And so that NBA response came out within an hour of ESPN's piece dropping, which was written by Baxter Holmes, Ramona Shelburne, and Don Van Natta. And the NBA coming out that quickly is pretty interesting that they decided to do that. But I think what we're seeing here is that I'd imagine either the Clippers or the Raptors or Kawhi's group, and all likely the Clippers themselves, leaked this. I'd imagine that the Clippers leaked this out because the Clippers also happened to release a statement at the same time. They knew this was coming. The Clippers said the team introduced players, including Kawhi, to companies in which that they had business relationships. And by making introductions between players and team partners, the Clippers said it's both an ordinary practice by NBA teams and a common request of players and representatives. So what seems probable here is that Kawhi is not going to face penalty. He's not going to have a voided contract. The Raptors-Clippers deal is probably going to go through. That's probably what we can say safely after all of this has been released so far. And now with the Clippers likely leaking to ESPN, trying to win this PR battle and also releasing a statement themselves, and with the NBA fighting back as well with their statement, I think what's happening is, as the Clippers and as the NBA are negotiating over some type of appropriate punishment, if the NBA has found no evidence here about this, with all this investigating, we really might just get a slap on the wrist. That's what might actually happen here, is just a little slap on the wrist. And that the Clippers are negotiating hard enough and going public, you know, through leaks and statements hard enough that they believe even what the NBA is proposing is too harsh. That's very possible here. And I think in the ESPN story, there's a couple of paragraphs where they mention a source who understands business dealings in the NBA. And this source said that salary cap circumvention penalty based on player introductions is, quote, an outrageous overreach. And then that source through ESPN continued, "If the league punishes the Clippers for introducing a player to a team sponsor, it will be, quote, felt across the league and players and their management won't stand for it." I think that's true because this happens everywhere. You got these billionaires and multimillionaires who, you know, own teams, hundreds of millions of dollars and investments that go into their funds, and star players find out about it. And like, it happens everywhere. It's not salary cap intervention in the way that originally when Pablo Torre broke this aspiration situation with the Clippers over a year ago. It's not the same thing. This happens everywhere. And so I think we may be at a point of this whole drama over the past year where the Clippers and the NBA are nearing the finish line, and it's just a matter of what type of slap on the wrist penalty are we going to get. I don't think we're going to have Steve Ballmer banned for a year. I don't think Kawhi Leonard's going to have his contract voided, and then the Clippers and the Raptors are in a tough situation. I don't even know if we're going to have draft picks being taken from a team. I don't know. I don't see that happening at this point. But maybe the NBA has something that we don't know about. Maybe they get something up their sleeve. Maybe there's some more evidence that we haven't heard about, and that's why they're pushing back, because maybe they do feel like they have reason to punish the Clippers in some way. But either way, very interesting that the league would come out after that ESPN story would drop. And very interesting, the Clippers, likely, not 100%. I would assume it's the Clippers. We can just say it's the Clippers that leaked this to ESPN. After the Clippers leaked all this stuff out, they're trying to plant their flag early before the penalty comes. Los Angeles is a very interesting time in the NBA right now. The Clippers are still dealing with this. The Lakers just sold, as we talked about a week ago, Mark Walter, the now ex-Lakers owner. Boy, oh boy, what a couple of days for him if you haven't followed the news since he sold the team. He's now trying to sell his Chelsea FC stake. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that federal prosecutors are investigating whether Mark Walter used middlemen to redirect customer funds back to himself without disclosing loans. And so Mark Walter, he makes a lot of his money from life insurance companies, and life insurance companies are supposed to invest into safe investments like public stocks and bonds with the money they get in return for the life insurance. And so what the Wall Street Journal is reporting on is that allegedly he used $16 billion in customers' money to make private loans into his own businesses through middlemen. And so the Wall Street Journal is reporting that those companies, that middlemen, were ABS Capital, Amistad Financial, Bradford Allen, and Hudson Trading. And then those companies would allegedly redirect the proceeds from those funds into other businesses in Mark Walter's empire. And so he sold the Lakers. Now he's trying to sell Chelsea. Could he be trying to sell the Los Angeles Dodgers next as well? I mean, this is fascinating what's happening in Los Angeles basketball right now. I'm not going to say one is far more interesting than the other. I'm just tired of the Clippers one. I'm ready for that to be resolved. But boy, this Mark Walter one, it feels like in some ways we're just at the beginning, the tip of the iceberg of what could be happening there. So we have a lot of drama in the NBA. We also had an actual trade. Something happened over the weekend. Dennis Schroeder was sent to the Charlotte Hornets for Trey Mann. This is a minor deal in the grand scheme of things, but it might actually lead to something bigger. And what I mean by that is Cleveland is in a position here where they're trying to move off salaries. And this seems like, from the people I talked to around the league, step one in a multi-step process to set up to go get Peyton Watson, Jonathan Kuminga, one of these free agents who are out there in a sign and trade. And so Charlotte, they get another creator in Schroeder. He's been around the block, played for different teams. Good addition for them to have another creator in their rotation. And then for the Cleveland side of things, Trey Mann seems like he'll be flipped, I would imagine. I would imagine Charlotte and Cleveland expand this out to either send Kuminga or Watson to Cleveland. And that's the next step that we're going to lead to here in the situation. And so I think when you look at potential fake trades, I'd imagine Cleveland targeting Watson is more likely from the conversations I've had. And so I think this is the type of structure you'd have to think about for Cleveland, them receiving Peyton Watson, Denver getting something from a third team and draft picks in return for him. And then I'm using in this example, the Memphis Grizzlies. They have a big traded player exception where they can take on Max Strus. That's the next guy the Cavaliers are going to have to move off of, according to my league sources. Steinlein also reported this as well, that Strus is a guy that the Cavaliers are looking to flip. And so in this example, the Memphis Grizzlies get Max Strus and Trey Mann. They dump D'Angelo Russell to the Denver Nuggets. Denver gets draft picks, some amount of picks from Memphis and or Cleveland. For the Cavaliers, I mean, I am not bullish on them by any means. I haven't been last year. I haven't been this summer, and I wouldn't be even if they get Peyton Watson. And I think you look at what this team might look like with Peyton Watson instead of Max Strus, a starting five of Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Peyton Watson, Donovan Mitchell, James Harden, assuming they bring back Harden, which I believe they will. That's a really nice starting five. But I still have questions. Does this team have enough shooting? Do they have enough creation? Because you look at the depth chart behind those guys, it's Thomas Bryant as a five. Jalen Tyson, if they keep him. Mario Hezonja, is his shooting going to translate from overseas in recent years to the NBA after he was really bad as a shooter earlier in his career, both in the NBA and overseas? Sam Merrill, who I like. Malik Thomas, he's a rookie. He had a great summer league, but he's a rookie. And so with Cleveland, they'd have 12 guys under contract post Watson or Kuminga acquisition, and a lot of question marks with their shooting, a lot of question marks with their creation. Obviously, James Harden and Donovan Mitchell would handle the big bulk of that. But what if one of those guys misses a month? What if one of those guys misses a couple weeks? Where is the creation behind those guys? And so I think for Cleveland, the top end of the roster, obviously with Harden and Mitchell, the off-ball abilities of Harden, the lack of defense with those guys, with Allen and Mobley, the lack of spacing between those two, the lack of toughness between those two, the lack of dog. I still have a lot of questions about this Cleveland roster. And so is it worth giving up Strus, one of your best shooters, one of your better defenders in the playoffs last year, to get Watson, who I like Peyton Watson, but 15 games of awesomeness when Jokic was out last year, and I don't know, a whole career of being, yeah, he's okay. He's solid. I don't know, man. I don't know if it's worth giving up everything to get him. But then again, you got to do something to get over the top if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think their situation, though, does speak to how much is still unresolved. We are on August 17th right now. Peyton Watson still floating out there with teams in pursuit of him. James Harden still unsigned for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jalen Duren and the Pistons still at a standoff that hasn't been figured out. Jonathan Kuminga's situation. Atlanta doesn't want him back. I don't know who does want him. I mean, it seems like nothing's happened yet. No clarity with his situation yet. I thought that'd be done by now. Benedict Mathurin. Mark Stein reported over the weekend that the Pelicans, the Bulls, and the Bucks all have interest in the Clippers restricted free agent. The Clippers also have interest in bringing back Mathurin. He's solid, but you know, he's not the type of guy teams are going over the top to get. DeMar DeRozan, same thing on the veteran side of things, though. DeRozan still no landing spot. I'd imagine he's not going to follow Russell Westbrook and retire. I think DeRozan is going to sign with a team, and there's a bunch of depth guys. Bruce Brown, Nick Richards, Seth Curry, Gabe Vincent, Maxi Kleba, Kelly Olynyk. Those guys are still available. Nick Batum seems like he's going overseas. There was reports about him returning to France, but that hasn't been ironed out yet. Younger guys, Agbaji, Jed Howard. There's still a lot of free agents out there to figure out what these rosters are going to look like. And so as I've been doing my entertainment rankings, the teams we've gone through so far at the bottom of the league, a lot of them are pretty set. It's these teams in the middle and at the top where things can change, and not necessarily that Peyton Watson or Jalen Duren or Kuminga or any of these guys are going to dramatically change how we feel about those teams. But those little moves on the edges can change the way you view a roster in a 7-game playoff series, especially with how they might develop over the course of the year. And for the next four teams that I talk about with my guest coming up, Trey Kirby from No Dunks, the Bulls, the Grizzlies, the Magic, and the Hawks. Most of these teams have already made their big moves this offseason. So I had a lot of fun talking with Trey Kirby about these teams, starting off with his Chicago Bulls, one of the most exciting teams in the summer, adding Caleb Wilson. And Trey Kirby and I had a lot of fun talking about them. So here's my guest, Trey Kirby from No Dunks. All right, now joining me to talk about some more teams on my NBA entertainment rankings, it's Trey Kirby from No Dunks. Trey, what's up?
Hey, KOC. How's it going, man? Happy to talk to somebody about basketball right now.
I know. It's a slow summer. We were just talking before the recording about how LeBron made his decision and everybody went on vacation. There's nothing happening at all. But we're going to make something happen, starting out with your Chicago Bulls, who drafted, I don't know, Michael Jordan Jr.? Is that what Caleb Wilson is? The best steal since Jordan? That's what he looks like in summer league.
It's a great time to be a Bulls fan. They lucked into the number 4 pick, the most foolproof place in the draft. They were just going to take whoever dropped the number four. It ended up being Caleb Wilson. He comes out to Summer League. And I don't know if he was necessarily the best rookie there, but he was probably the most exciting rookie, and he definitely had the most highlights, knocking down threes like crazy, kind of unexpectedly. He seems like he's been in the gym since suffering a couple of injuries at UNC, and apparently he got in the gym with Lethal Shooter. He understands it now. It's the beginning of August. The season still doesn't start for 2.5 months, but right now it feels pretty good to be a Bulls fan.
I have no doubt about that. I mean, you hired a new head coach, new GM, Tiago Splitter, Bryson Graham, respectively. Drafted Caleb Wilson with the 4th pick, who looks like a big steal. Daylon Swain, a 16th, who, you know, not so good. I mean, as good as Caleb Wilson looked, Daylon Swain did not look great. Signed Norm Powell, who, what a weird quote. Like, we have the upside to be great. We could be really bad, too. Is that... That's a real quote, right? He actually said that?
He said that, and I got to agree. I think it's maybe more likely they end up on the bad side. I'm not expecting a lot of wins for the Bulls this season, but they are in a fun zone right now, which is young team, low expectations, but probably a fun team. Like, I'm expecting them to at least be an exciting offense. We've seen them play pretty fast in the past couple of years. They brought in Nick Claxton, a guy who can run. Norm Powell likes to get some shots up. Buzelis is a speedy player. We know Giddey's going to push the pace. I think they should at least be an entertaining, if bad, watch this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I have them 23rd in my rankings, and that's not a knock to be in the bottom 10. There's a lot of very fun, entertaining teams. It's just they don't have the stakes. It's not like this team is going to be a contender. The 500 is what you're hoping for at best, I think, with them. I don't think they have much potential to be a chaotic team either. I don't think this is going to be a train wreck that you enjoy watching. I think this is just going to be a good, fun, young team. But I think from an X's and O's standpoint, with Tiago Splitter as the new head coach, I am going to be very, very intrigued to see the way in which he uses a lot of these forwards. You have Josh Giddey, who's a big point guard. Modest Buzelis at 6'9", who's a very talented shot creator as well. Caleb Wilson, who is not a big. He looked more like a big wing in summer league, shooting threes, handling the ball. So you got Caleb Wilson, Modest Buzelis, Josh Giddey, even, you know, Noah Senge. He has not looked great so far, but he's another big creator. Like, this team, Daylon Swain is a rookie coming in at 6'6", good size. Leonard Miller as a deep guy off the bench. There's a lot of big guys, but with Caleb Wilson, Modest Buzelis, and Josh Giddey being the main ones, how the hell does Tiago Splitter work these guys in together? I'm just going to be fascinated to watch that above all else.
That's a great question, KOC, because you're mentioning all of these guys with good size, good athleticism, good speed, maybe good athletes. You're not naming a lot of good shooters, which I think is why Norman Powell was such an important piece for them to add this offseason. Just somebody who can shoot from three and that is going to willingly shoot from three. When you look at the projected starting lineup, he's the only plus three-point shooter. I guess you could say Buzelis and Giddey like top out at average three-point shooting. I think it's going to have to be transition that they're scoring in. And it's kind of hard to tell exactly what Tiago Splitter is going to try to pull off with the Bulls, because he only had that one season with Portland. And I look at the way Portland had success last year. Physicality, defense, they were one of the teams that kind of helped usher in the picking up full court strategy. That doesn't necessarily play to the Bulls' strengths this year. I don't see them being a lockdown defensive team. I think they're a team that's going to take their licks on that end and then hopefully, you know, put up 120, 125, running as much as possible, getting the ball out and trying to turn some kind of turnovers into offense.
Yeah, I think that's spot on there. And I think for the guard play with Norm Powell, how important he was, to your point, they don't have many guys that are kind of in that smaller guard role. I think with Norm Powell, he's obviously the big name, the more proven guy, but Trey Jones, he's okay. Rob Dillingham.
Hey, don't sleep on Trey Jones, KOC.
I mean,
he's the next Scottie Pippen Jr.
He could be. It could be the next Scottie Pippen Jr. Pippen Jr. is really good for Memphis.
Really exactly. Good. A guy you can get excited for off the bench who, like, maybe isn't going to be the greatest player, but he's a little bit better than you think. That's Trey Jones, buddy.
Yeah, it is Trey Jones, and I mean, hopefully he's able to provide something, and hopefully Rob Dillingham's able to find his way. He seemed to really lose confidence in himself after the trade from Minnesota to Chicago. And a guy like that, I mean, he was so talented at the high school and overtime elite and college level. And to see him really struggling, I think it speaks to how tough it is to be so small in today's NBA, which is in part why the Bulls are drafting so many big guys that can also handle the ball, because that's the nature of today's NBA. I just don't think this team's going to be very good. I know they're a popular pick to exceed expectations, but the center spot, Nick Claxton, I used to love Nick Claxton and his prime years in Brooklyn. He was one of the best switch defenders in recent memory. He is a complete shell of his former self at this point. And can he tap back into that? Maybe. I hope so. But even if he does, behind him, Zach Collins, Jalen Smith. I mean, those guys are okay. Collins is a tanking piece. I'm almost surprised they brought him back. And so for Chicago, I think they're going to be fun to watch. Very exciting. I love their youth. I love Bouzelis. I love Caleb Wilson. I love Josh Giddey. I really, really am excited about those young guys, but I still don't think it's going to necessarily translate to wins early on in their careers together.
Yeah, I'm with you. It feels like the play-in dynasty in Chicago is finally coming to an end. I don't even foresee them getting into the mix for like the 9th and 10th seeds, which is where they've been living since the play-in was created. For the most part, it's all about figuring out what pieces fit together, seeing how Bouzelis and Wilson function as a pair of forwards. You know, one's a wing, maybe they're both wings, maybe they're both half bigs, who knows. It's all about putting those two guys together, seeing how they play off of each other, and then how Giddey fits in as well. I'm not super convinced that he's a long-term piece for the Bulls, but having him as a setup man is going to be important for Wilson, for Bouzelis, guys who are maybe not built to get their own shots at this point in their career. So when you're looking at over-unders, you know, the Bulls are going to be in the bottom five teams in the league, I think. And to me, that seems about right. They won't be the worst team in the league, I don't think, this season, but they probably will do pretty well in draft rankings. And that's where you want to be. Mm-hmm. Not the worst team, but pretty bad.
Exactly. And I think they're going to be in that type of range, and good for them if they do end up getting some lottery luck. But also nice to just see them reverse the court curse of the fourth pick, Patrick Williams, who Bulls fans just want to see him gone and replace him with Caleb Wilson. And so good for them turning around with that fourth pick. Next up in my rankings, tied with score, is the Memphis Grizzlies with the Chicago Bulls. So I had these teams tied. I gave the Grizzlies an edge in terms of my entertainment rankings. And that's in part because I think the Grizzlies have a chance to get themselves into the play-in in the Western Conference, because this roster, when you look at how deep they are, Zach Edey, as long as he's healthy, they were a plus 17 net rating last year in the limited minutes with Edey on the floor. You add Cam Boozer, who is going to be good right away. You trade for Jeremy Grant, who had a resurgence last season in Portland. Cedric Coward year two. Ty Jerome wasn't healthy last year, but he was great when he was at the end of the year. You bring him back this year in full, adding Isaiah Stewart off the bench, a great versatile big man who can shoot threes and offer defense. Cam Spencer, such a good shooter, such a good creator. Jalen Wells, Scottie Pippen, Omax Prosper. Like, that's the 11th name I've mentioned. Quentin Post, the 12th name. Walter Clayton, 13th guy. Kareem Lopez, their rookie. This is a deep Grizzlies roster. Like, there's going to be good players not getting minutes in Memphis, and I think their top end is very underrated with what it could be this year. Am I too bullish on Memphis, Trey?
Well, I mean, when you're telling me that they're going to be decent because they have Omax Prosper as a 12th man, you might be a little bit bullish, KOC, but I'm with you. I'm optimistic about this team relative to expectations. You look at last year's Grizzlies, their top three in minutes played were Jalen Wells, Cam Spencer, Cedric Coward. That's two guys in their second year who were second round draft picks and a rookie. This year, they've brought in some vets. Like, I'm not the biggest beef stew fan. I'm not the biggest Jeremy Grant fan. But having those guys on the court is going to be huge for a Grizzlies team that should be turning the corner, I think, towards a new era. You know, they finally said goodbye to Ja Morant. They said goodbye to Jaren Jackson Jr. That came a few months after they let go of Desmond Bane. That grit and grind 2.0 era for the Grizzlies it's not hanging over their heads anymore. They brought in a lot of pro dudes. I'm with you on Ty Jerome. He's just a bucket. He's an efficient player. He's good in the mid-range. He makes his three-pointers. Staying healthy is huge for him. And then, like you said, Edie is the huge question mark. Only 11 games last season, but the Grizzlies were dominant in the games and the minutes that he played. Not my favorite that a guy that big is coming off of basically back-to-back ankle surgeries. That isn't the most encouraging thing to hear going into a season, but I like the nucleus they put around Edie, Cam Boozer, and Cedric Coward. Those are all three big physical dudes. You can tell what the Grizzlies are trying to build is something similar to what they've had in the past. And I at least like the outlines of the start they have.
There's going to be some good players available because Memphis has too many guys. They need to get down to 15 and they got good players that are going to have to go. So I think with Memphis, you're going to see like a Omax Prosper or a Taylor Hendricks. You know, they're not necessarily going to be long-term guys, but you could see them find themselves on another roster and get an opportunity there with this Memphis team. But I'm excited about the Grizzlies, man. I think with Memphis, the Ja Morant era, I was always a Ja skeptic. Even at the peak of his career, I wasn't overly high on Ja. I thought he was too inefficient as a shooter, didn't play enough defense. I've just never been the biggest Ja guy. And so I'm happy for Memphis fans that they now get a clean slate with a lot of likable players on this team. I look forward to seeing how Isola, their head coach, puts these guards into positions to succeed. Because I think, you know, there's clarity with Zach Edey. He's a big who rolls, who can post up, who can occasionally shoot threes, offers rim protection. With Cam Boozer, he's going to be a Swiss Army knife. Like, you're going to use Boozer all around the floor as a ball handler, as a screener, at the post. He's going to be literally everywhere on the floor. Grant and Coward are your wings, and Jalen Wells and guys like that. But Ty Jerome, Cam Spencer, Scottie Pippen Jr., you mentioned him earlier. Like how are they going to use those guards within this offense? Because what I'm seeing, Trey, when I look at this team, is this is going to be a roster where there's points of attack from everywhere, because all of those guards can play off ball and cut and screen and shoot too. So I think you're going to see a very diverse offensive attack with Boozer really being at the center of it, playing a lot of inverted offense.
Yeah, you can definitely squint and see the Grizzlies turning into a team that plays quote unquote the beautiful game, because they have so many points of attack that aren't from their point guard spot, right? Outside of Edie, basically everybody else is going to have a chance to initiate offense, be involved in the connection pieces from time to time. And even Edie is going to be a huge part of the offense. It's just not going to be him bringing up the ball and getting things going, but maybe he'll operate out of the high post. Maybe him and Boozer will turn into a vicious high-low combo together. It does feel like meshing all of these different offensive talents with a coach like Isolo, who isn't necessarily just going to settle into a give one guy the ball, let's go pick and roll all the time. That was the problem with Ja Morant at the end, is that he wanted to play that style and Isolo didn't. It feels like having a bunch of multifaceted players, a bunch of guards who can play with the ball and off the ball, fits into what Isolo wants to do more. So now it's just a matter of getting these guys up to speed, getting NBA reps, and figuring out how they actually can be effective together.
All right, up next, number 21, the Orlando Magic. This summer, they hired a new head coach, Sean Sweeney, brought back Nikola Vucevic, drafted Felix Akpara in the second round. They lost Mo Wagner. Not a lot besides bringing in a new head coach. And so I think, Orlando, you're looking at a team that's having a very similar roster to what we saw last season. And the big question with them is going to be, what does Sean Sweeney do with it? Now, but I think before we get to the Sean Sweeney aspect, number one, above all else, is the Franz Wagner Paolo Banchero combination. Are those guys finally going to click? Are those guys finally going to play a lot of minutes together? Over the last two seasons, those guys have shared the court for only 1,416 minutes. That's it. They haven't, neither of them have been on the floor for 2,192 minutes over the last 2 years. And so this team has been okay, pretty solid, a plus 3.2 net rating in the minutes with Wagner and Banchero. They've been really good in the minutes with just Franz Wagner, a plus 6.8 net rating. They've been negative minus 1.9 with Banchero only on the floor. And then with neither of them, which has been a large chunk of the time, as I said, 2,192 minutes, minus 3.1 net rating. And so are these two guys finally going to click, whether it's due to their own development or something that Sean Sweeney does, or are we going to be talking in the middle of the year about Ben Caro trades once again, potentially?
Well, first off, I have to start by saying it's disrespectful to have the Chicago Bulls below the Orlando Magic on your entertainment rankings. Well, you're telling me you want to see these guys bricking away more than Caleb Wilson throwing down?
Let me explain. I have categories where I've rated each team, like the star gravity. Do they have stars? The stakes, is this team contending or not? The future, like the Bulls are like a 9 out of 10 for their future. The Magic are not. They're like a 3 out of 10 for their future roster. But where the Magic get an edge is the chaos potential. This is a team that I think you could be watching a train wreck. So when I think of the entertainment rankings, I'm not talking purely from a league pass standpoint. What I'm going to tune into at 10 p.m. East, you know, at night for a West Coast team, I'm talking about when you're following the news and like you're waiting for a notification to pop up. I'm talking about that and the on-court stuff, all of it combined. And I think Orlando could get pretty messy this year is what I'm saying. I think it could get very messy and interesting with them. So that's why. Whereas Chicago, they're not going to be chaotic. I'd be shocked if they were chaotic.
They've gone through their Magic era already where it was like, oh, is this team actually going to work? We're going to have to break it apart. You could factor in that the Magic are actually going to be playing games that matter this season in your entertainment rankings. And like you're saying, it does feel like a crossroads season for the Magic. Last offseason, they decided to part ways with Jamal Mosley. That was the move they made. That just means the players are left for things that could change. It definitely feels like Paolo Franz is the first thing to figure out, since they are both seem like players who could be the best player on a good team. Do they necessarily make each other better? We're not sure yet. And that's because the injuries have been such a problem for both of these guys. It's also weird that I feel like the Paolo Banchero, his stock falls during every regular season. We see the inefficiency. We see him, maybe not playing to his strengths the way some people would like. But then it comes playoff time and he puts together a great playoff run. He seems to be a playoff riser at the very least. I'm a Paolo fan, but I do have some questions about the fit in Orlando and exactly how long they're going to be able to keep trying these two guys together rather than trying something new, especially with these big contracts kicking in. I think you could even say something similar about Suggs and Anthony Black. Are these two guys going to be able to fit together? So to me, the first choice is, what are we doing with Paolo and Franz? And then they're going to have to figure out the backcourt as well.
I think that's spot on, Trey, because you look at this team, right? They were 22nd in three-point attempts last year, 27th in three-point percentage. They added Desmond Bane last year. Yeah, he took 8 shots a game. He shot over 40%, but he alone didn't fix their shooting woes in terms of efficiency or in terms of volume. They need more. They need Wagner to shoot better. They need Banchero to shoot better. They need those guards, Black and Suggs, to shoot better. And I think when I look at Sean Sweeney and the job he's going to have to do as head coach, I don't think this roster has the guys. I don't think there's anything he can do from an X's and O's standpoint to modernize this offense unless they get individual player development. Like Jalen Suggs, what was it? He went like 1 of 38 or something from three. How many threes did he miss in a row in the first round? It's disgusting. It was gross.
He definitely has a way longer track record of missing threes than he did that one season where he's like a 40% three-point shooter. That seems to have been a flash in the pan. But I'm with you. It felt like, you know, the Magic did all they could last season to go from bottom five in the league to 19th in offense.
Jeez.
Bane did have a good middle part of the season when Paolo was dealing with some injuries, when Franz was dealing with some injuries, and they needed him to take over more of a primary responsibility, but he can't do it all on his own. One of Paolo or Franz is going to have to become a three-point shooter, and we're getting far enough into their careers where you have to think if that's a realistic outcome. I don't know.
With Franz Wagner, it's fascinating because even back in college at Michigan, he was an 80-plus percent guy from the free throw line. Always an 80-plus percent guy. He's in his NBA career, he shot 85.1% from the free throw line. He's got touch on floaters and, you know, in the paint and these tough, you know, touch layups off the glass and everything.
Great finisher for sure.
great finisher, all of it, but 32.4% from three. It just has never translated for him from 3-point range. Whereas Banchero has always been, you know, mild efficiency from the line and from mid range and from three. I don't expect it from Paolo as much, but from Wagner, it should happen at some point, but it hasn't. And even if it does, though, even if Wagner's a 40% guy from three this year, what you're hitting on with Suggs and Black in the backcourt, I look at those guys and I'm like, yeah, they're good players, but is this the best fit? And so is there anybody else on this team that can emerge as a big piece? And to me, I think the guy that I look at is their first round pick last year out of Michigan State, guard Jace Richardson. He didn't get much of an opportunity last year. He's undersized. He's not an elite athlete like his father, Jason Richardson, was, but he's so skilled as a creator, as a shooter. And I think with Jace Richardson, if you're looking at any young guy on the Magic roster who could pop out of nowhere and change the complexion of the team, I think the variety Richardson could provide as a guy who's about 6 foot, quicker, you know, agile, smaller player, that variety might work compared to some of the size across positions that Orlando has otherwise. Do you think there's something to that, you know, when it comes to having someone smaller surrounded by, you know, a bunch of trees, a bunch of tall players?
Yeah, I do. Because in my wedding party, we had four guys who were 6'4" or taller. And then one of our friends is 5'9" and he was just killing it on the dance floor. So it's got to be the same for Jace Richardson. I was the same. I was a big fan of his coming out of college. And I think he at least needs to get some sort of a chance in the backcourt for Orlando. We saw all the moves that happened during this offseason. The Celtics broke up Tatum and Brown because they're worried about the second apron. The Knicks lost Mitchell Robinson because they're worried about the second apron. The Thunder started making moves because they're worried about the second apron. The Magic are going to run into similar problems having big contracts in Paolo, Franz, and Desmond Bane, which means you need to play your young guys at least a little bit to see if they're players who are going to be able to stick around until their second contract, until their third contract. I think Richardson needs to at least start the season as part of the rotation for Orlando. They can take a chance and see exactly, let him stretch his legs, let him spread his wings and see what he can offer as, like, he's probably not their sixth man. Maybe he's like their seventh, eighth man, but he needs to be playing just to see if they should continue to invest in this guy going forward.
Next up, number 20 on my entertainment rankings, the Atlanta Hawks. And I think this team is fascinating from a lot of different standpoints because we're getting into the range now of these teams where I think everybody's entertaining, especially in like the top 25 range or so. In Atlanta especially, they trade for Lu Dort, Ryan Nemhard. They dump number one pick Zachary Risacher. They get a short-term opportunity with Jonathan Kuminga. They say sayonara to him. No thanks. We don't want you back. They sign Aaron Wiggins away from Oklahoma City. They draft Kingston Fleming, Zubi Ejiofor, Henry Vassar. They bring back CJ McCollum and Jock Landale. And so this team that was one of the best rosters in the second half of the NBA last year, they're up in the first round against the eventual champion New York Knicks. Then they have a pretty sizable summer shakeup. Those are a lot of changes. So what does that all lead to? Or is this going to be a second half blip last year, or did they, these changes, does that set them up for a leap? What do you think needs to happen in Atlanta for them to indeed have another leap next season?
To have another leap, the Hawks need either Jalen Johnson or Nikhil Alexander Walker to have their own other leap. You know, Nikhil Alexander Walker ended up winning MIP last season. Jalen Johnson could have been in the mix for it. He could have possibly won it the year before had he not gotten injured. They both took steps forward for sure. But when you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, they don't have the top end talent that the Sixers do, that the Celtics do, that the Pistons do. They don't have a number one guy who's on par with the best players in the rest of the East, unless Jalen Johnson gets to that level. I think the playoffs was a little concerning that CJ McCollum was their best player down here in Atlanta. People love the guy. They say he beat the Knicks twice. Nobody else could do that. But you don't necessarily want him to be your go-to scorer when it matters. Johnson was definitely taken out of the series, sometimes by OG, sometimes by Mikal Bridges. He was just completely out of sorts. There were times during the regular season last year when it really felt like the game had slowed down for Jalen. And I think that he just needs to double down on what he's best at. Developing an outside jumper, that's key for any player who has the ball a ton. So we'll see if he can take a step forward there. Because to me, he is the biggest chance at them having a real star. Nikhil Alexander-Walker seems like a perfect complementary piece to a guy like Jalen Johnson. I don't know if he can increase his scoring much more than the 20 a game he was given the Hawks last year, but he's a really good player. I think if the Hawks are able to take a step forward into being a top four team in the East, it's because Jalen Johnson has become a top 10 to 15 player in the league.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, all of it. I mean, I think Jalen Johnson continuing to improve on offense, but also like getting back to what he was prior on defense. I think improving on that end of the floor is important too. I would also add, are they big enough? Jock Landale, Onyeka Okongwu, Henry Vassar, I like these guys individually, but are they big enough at the five? The shooting, Dyson Daniels, Lou Dort, some of these iffy, shaky shooters, are they going to be able to space the floor enough? And I think the big one that you hit on, CJ McCollum's a good player, but you're not a championship team if CJ McCollum is your end game scorer. And so do they have the guy? Do the Hawks have the guy on their team? And I think Jalen Johnson is the guy who would, in all likelihood, have to become that. Can Kingston Flemings as a rookie start showing flashes? I think it's a lot to ask for Kingston Flemings, especially after or at Houston as a freshman. He had some real struggles in the tournament. He had some struggles in endgame situations. And so asking him to be that guy as a rookie, I think is very unfair. That's more of a long-term answer. So in the short term, Jalen Johnson and then Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, so much of the damage he did last year on the offensive end of the floor was due to off-ball, coming off of screens, handoffs, cutting, spot-ups, relocations. He was, you know, subpar efficiency as a pick-and-roll scorer and as an isolation scorer. So if Nikhil Alexander-Walker can take another leap as an on-ball guy, I think then we're talking about Atlanta as not just a team that's a nice, cute story, fun team to watch, going to be competitive, but lose in the first or second round. I think if he can take a leap or if Jalen Johnson can take a leap, then yeah, suddenly Atlanta is in a position where we're talking with the roster as is. And otherwise, I think it's just going to have to be via trade or via, you know, young guy getting significantly better a la Kingston Flemings.
Yeah, you're exactly right. If it's not Johnson, if it's not Nikhil Alexander-Walker, that guy is probably not on the roster at this point, but that's not bad for the Hawks because they've got a ton of assets they can move. You just named probably 10 guys who could play for any team in the league. They've got a lot of extra picks. They've got just contracts that are easy enough to be moved. And I'm with you. They're not a very big team. Like missing Jock Landale in the first round of the playoffs as a big man to battle against Mitchell Robinson was a major problem for the Hawks. Maybe after you, I'm the second biggest Mo Gay fan in the NBA media. But they also were a top 10 defense last year. They may not be big inside, but they've got good size on the perimeter. They're really active. They were a top 10 defense last year, and that can kind of feed into their offense that doesn't necessarily have the go-to scorer. I think the problem for the Hawks is that they can have a good regular season. They can have a regular season that exceeds expectations. But then when they get in the playoffs against those teams that have a Kawhi Leonard or a Giannis, how do they necessarily match that? Like we're saying, they might not be able to match that with the guys they have right now, but it doesn't mean they can't come into that guy at the trade deadline or maybe next offseason as well.
Big thank you to Trey Kirby for joining me on today's episode. We'll be back again on Thursday with another episode continuing the entertainment rankings and perhaps discussing news. I think we're due. This Jalen Duren, Peyton Watson, all these guys, they're going to sign eventually. It's going to happen sooner than later. So Tom Havishaw is going to be back on Thursday. Lots to discuss still this NBA offseason. Thanks to Emmy and the team for producing today's episode. Hope you have a good week, everybody.